IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi everyone and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Sunila Dixit and today I have with me my colleagues Shambhavi Naik and Amay Palija. This is going to be the second episode in the COVID-19 vaccine update series. Welcome Amay and Shambhavi.
Hi Sunila.
Hey Sunila, how are you doing?
So today we are going to be talking about the progress that has happened in the vaccine production or in the vaccine trials till now. And we will also discuss about if we can see a vaccine ready in the near future or we'll have to wait longer. So Amay and Shambhavi, among the major updates that have been there in the news about the COVID-19 vaccine, one of them is that AstraZeneca said its vaccine is 90% effective. And Russia said that its Sputnik vaccine is about 95% effective and that it will cost less than $10 in the global markets. Also, India is supposed to be one of its producers. So do you guys want to tell our listeners more in detail about these updates about the COVID-19 vaccine?
Sure. So the thing is that, you know, there's a lot of news that has come up. Last time in the episode, we discussed how Moderna and Pfizer declared their interim results. And we have some news coming in now with AstraZeneca and Sputnik. And, you know, there is good news if you compare AstraZeneca, because they're saying that, you know, our vaccine is 90% effective. There is some fine print over there saying that the vaccine, when given with two doses, is just 62% effective or 69% effective. But that is something that, you know, we need to see a lot of the granular data when the study is published. Like I said the last time, that AstraZeneca is willing to publish all their details in a peer-reviewed journal. So we have to wait for that publication to come out and see what is it that they are doing and how exactly are they confirming that this is the efficiency of our vaccine. And we still need to see that. But what is interesting is that, you know, AstraZeneca has said that, you know, they will offer it for a very low price, almost like a no profit level. And that puts the AstraZeneca vaccine at a very low cost. And I think Sputnik is kind of trying to play the middle game over here, because they've got much better efficacy levels. So they are saying that our vaccine is not going to be as expensive as, you know, the Moderna or the Pfizer one, but probably for $20 for two doses and 95% effectiveness, you know, you can actually take our vaccine. So it's good news coming out. You know, like somewhere at the beginning of the pandemic, if we would have said that, you know, we'll have vaccines with 90, 95% efficiencies, nobody would have believed it. Because even flu shots, we know, work only 50%, 40%, 60% of the times. And now we have these vaccines which are just competing at a very high level with each other. So AstraZeneca, somewhere, you know, the number is a little less. But I think what they are trying to do is kind of say that this is available for a lower price. And, you know, so it's like a trade-off that you're doing. You know, if you don't want to pay $40 for a dose, but take a vaccine that works 70, 80% of the times, then AstraZeneca is the choice for you.
I just wanted to add that with the AstraZeneca vaccine, there's still a lot to be figured out in terms of dosing, right? So like Amir mentioned, there was this weird result where the half dose followed by a full dose regimen was giving better efficiency than the 10 to full doses. We still don't know why that has happened. There are various theories about how immunity works and how the immunity might have responded, how the immune system might have responded to that first half dose, and that could have caused a better reaction. Professor Gagandeep Kang today has tweeted out saying that AstraZeneca might have done this in error, given the half dose, and that accident is no way of getting to a better efficiency, and so more dose regimens should be given and they should be tried much more extensively before it comes out into the public. The good news obviously for both AstraZeneca and Sputnik is that they can be kept at 2 to 8 degrees, which means they are going to be easy to transport. We already have the infrastructure to in place to kind of at least distribute them, unlike the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. So there's good news there coming through.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, but I do think that AstraZeneca somewhere had an idea that, you know, this is what is working. I don't think it should be an accident, right? Like, why would somebody, you know, like, and they have multiple trials, right? They have they have multiple points in the trial where they review the data. So they've done their phase one, phase two trials. So they must be knowing that, you know, two doses Maybe. Are not giving that kind of a response. So we need to tick, you know, kind of... you know, make some tiny little changes and see how things are working. There is the Sputnik vaccine, basically, that's what they claim. What they do is that they have two different vectors for the first mm-hmm. and the second mm-hmm. dose. So their claim is that, you know, AstraZeneca is facing this issue because you have the same vector and the immune system kind of recognizes that it's the same vector. So the second time it does not really do a massive response to it. Whereas the half vaccine is like, you know, it's like a mixed signal. You don't know whether it has happened, it has not happened. So the body's kind of going full blow. But what Sputnik claims is that we have two different vectors. So we will definitely get better immune responses for our vaccine candidates. So I do have a feeling that, you know, AstraZeneca did know very well in advance that this is how it is. And, you know, the probably the half dose thing is actually a strategy to counter that and say that, okay, how can we reach 80% or 90%? Because, you know, that kind of makes it more attractive, right?
For people. It is likely. I mean, we'll have to probably go and look back up at the clinical trials data because I don't think they can just tweak things on their own. They need approvals. So I think that's something we can discuss in our next episode as well on how this actually might have played out.
We'll probably have more data by then as well.
Yeah. It's probably too early to say. But I think we should again reinforce the fact that a lot of the organizations, including FDA, say that we need, the minimum we need is about 50% of efficiency. So any vaccine that is approved should have 50%, should cause immune reaction in 50% of the people. So all of these vaccines are actually doing pretty well by that mark.
Those are some interesting updates and show a lot of hope. But leaving aside all the technical details in depth, I want to ask you both a very basic question. Now, when these vaccine companies say their vaccine is 95% effective or 90% effective, what does it exactly mean? Like, does it mean the vaccine is effective in 90% of the people who participated in the clinical trials? Can you explain it in simple terms for people who don't know anything at all about these concepts?
Yeah, sure. So basically, the vaccine efficacy is just a measure to know how well is the vaccine is actually working. So the idea of the trials is to understand how well, you kind of understand how well will this play out in the larger population. So the phase three clinical trials, as we've discussed earlier, have tens of thousands of people who are vaccinated. And what you want to understand is how many percent of those people actually get protection because of the vaccine. What will happen when the vaccine is actually marketed, is available to a larger population, is that a much lesser number would actually, the vaccine will be effective in a much lesser number of the population. But you still want to understand how good is the efficiency of the vaccine. So that's why you try to measure what is the scientific term for that is the attack rate. So in case you have a person who's not vaccinated, what is the likelihood that he's going to get infected because of this, the virus or bacteria or whatever you're dealing with. And then you subtract how many people you have vaccinated, but they have still gotten the infection. So what happens is, let's say you have 100 people, your attack rate for unvaccinated people is somewhere around 100. And you have, say, 5% of the people whom you vaccinated who still got the disease, right? So out of 100, you have 5 people who got the disease, 5 people, and 100 people who should ideally get the disease every single time because they are exposed to this. So you subtract that, so you get a 95. And then the baseline is again your attack rate of unvaccinated people. So that's 100 again. So you get 95 divided by 100 into 100. So that's 95%. That is how these are calculated. The way it works in a large number of clinical trials is that after you give vaccine doses, what you do is you wait for people to show symptoms. So both in case of Pfizer or Moderna or whatever vaccines we're talking about, they have pre-decided a number. So usually that number is somewhere around 90, 100 or 132. You know, these are depending on how many people are enrolled in their trials. And then they wait for those many people to show up saying that I got the symptom. So once these people show up, then they go back to their data and see whether these people, how many of them actually got the vaccine and how many actually got the placebo shot, which is what happens in a normal clinical trial. So half of the people don't get the vaccine, half of the people do get the vaccine. So on that basis, then they are able to say that, okay, out of the people we gave the vaccine to, it has worked in 95% of the people. So the reason why this number is kind of tentative right now is because they have analyzed the first set of people. You know, so they'll analyze another set of people, probably 15 days or another 30 days down the line, or whenever that number is reached. And then these efficacy numbers might drop or might increase. So most likely they're going to drop. So whatever is 95% might go down to 90% or something like that. But that is what tends to happen. So you're just trying to measure how many people are infected now and how many of them actually got the vaccine. So you compare their attack rates and get to know how effective is the vaccine.
So let me just clarify, this is natural immunity, right? This is natural infection, right? So these are people who have got the vaccine or the placebo shot who are encouraged to then go out in the open and get the virus. They are not actually given the virus. These are not challenge studies.
Yeah, these are not challenge studies.
These are not challenge studies. So these are people who are naturally getting the virus because they are actively in networks where they meet other people.
Yeah.
So if they catch the virus, they have a placebo. If they develop the disease, they will give symptoms. Or if they have the vaccine and the vaccine has not worked and they catch the virus, then they will again show symptoms.
Yeah. So there's one more thing that, you know, people tend to look at is that how many people show symptoms and then how many people has the infection not happened. So I don't think all clinical trials are measuring how many people have not been infected as of now. So that data we don't have right now. So there is because, you know, the way COVID is and, you know, you have a lot of asymptomatic people who might have the infection but not show the symptoms. So there is one more measure of that as well. So ideally, you want people who are not infected at all, but it's difficult to gauge it. So what they do is they just look at symptoms.
So thanks, Amay and Shambhik, for making it easier to understand what exactly efficacy of vaccine means. Now, moving forward to other updates. In the recent news, Haryana's health minister tweeted that he will be volunteering himself to get the dose of Covaxin, which is being produced by Bharat Biotech. And in contrast, Russia said that its President Vladimir Putin won't be taking the COVID vaccine Sputnik because it is still an uncertified vaccine. What is your opinion on this? Because Haryana's health minister volunteering himself can help in gaining people's trust when it comes to vaccination. But on the other hand, Russia keeping the president away from volunteering for the vaccination might be a practical thing to do. So is this a good thing or bad thing?
Okay. The thing is that, the health minister in Haryana actually volunteered himself. So he's kind of, it really increases people's perception of that the vaccine is safe and they should volunteer. If they want to volunteer for it, they can volunteer for it. However, I also see the other effect of it. That is that, ideally the person who's getting the vaccine does not know whether he's got a placebo or he's got the actual vaccine dose. And I don't know, being a health minister, what is it that, if he says that I've gotten the vaccine dose so confidently, I don't know if it is still a blind trial as it is supposed to be. It is kind of a little confusing in that terms where, is he kind of getting the vaccine shot? Is there like pressure on the people who are conducting trials to give him the vaccine shot? Or is it just it's not very clear how they are doing this. And ideally, it should not be like that. It should not be that, people, when you're taking the vaccine dose or if you're a volunteer for a vaccine trial, the media is over there and everybody gets to know that you are doing this or you're doing that. So it's a little, mixed up for me. And I can't really see the good part about what he has volunteered to do. he should have just said that, you know, there is a vaccine available. All those who would like to volunteer, please go ahead and volunteer. But yeah, as head of state, definitely Russia is saying that, you know, Putin will not get it. If you remember, the first news that came in about the Sputnik vaccine was that, you know, one of Putin's kin had received the vaccine, was a volunteer.
His daughter got it.
Yeah, his daughter got it. So you know, so there is a different, you know, there's a different protocol in terms of what happens. But at the same time, you know, if you look at what happened with, you know, Donald Trump, he actually got this cocktail of antibodies, which nobody else got it. So there are different protocols which different countries follow. But in terms of this, ideally, it should not have been such a, you know, media flare up about this. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think the most damaging part was the fact that he said that I'm going to get the vaccine. I think what he probably just meant to say that I'm going to volunteer for the trial. And I hope that's what it all boils down to, that he's volunteering to be part of the trial, which might be a good thing. I mean, celebrities world over have pushed vaccination drives by the fact that they've been part of this. I know Elvis Presley did to the polio vaccine back in the 1950s, when there was a lot of concern about the safety of the vaccine. And that was followed by a huge surge in vaccinations in the US. Andrew Lloyd Webber said that he signed up for the COVID-19, the Oxford trial back in August. So it can help build public confidence if people in the limelight are taking the vaccine and it's demonstrated to be safe. But yeah, it also has to be scientific. I don't think that any tribal does know what whether they're getting a vaccine or a placebo. I spoke to one trial participant from the Oxford trial in India, and he was saying that the trial protocols were extremely robust. He obviously doesn't know what he got, placebo or vaccine. But they were really good in follow-ups. They were really good in tracking his antibody levels and other vital signs. So I think a robust vaccine protocol, a vaccine trial protocol, is going to be more important than celebrity endorsement as well in building public confidence. So hopefully that was just a misreading on behalf of the minister, and he doesn't actually know what he's getting.
Yeah, just to add to that, when the Moderna trials basically began, you know, there are a lot of people who kind of said that, okay, I did not get any symptoms, so I'm pretty sure I got the placebo. So I read something where, you know, in certain trials, what they actually do is that, you know, one person gets the vaccine that is being trialed out, whereas the another person will get a vaccine that we know works, right, for a different disease altogether. So what tends to happen is that, you know, the common symptoms like, you know, probably dizziness or fatigue or slight fever or something are kind of seen in most people. So people, you know, continue to think that, okay, this is what, you know, I have been given the dose. And, you know, so that's like a good way of kind of saying that, you know, that kind of controls for it much better. You're not giving the person any hint that this person has gotten the placebo. So that's probably a good way of doing the trial.
So you're saying the symptoms from getting the vaccine?
Yes. And
because some of these vaccines can cause a slight fever. I know the yellow fever one does.
Yeah.
So a couple of days after you actually get the vaccine, you show some kind of symptoms, tiredness and a mild fever.
Yes.
And making sure that the placebo group also gets that can help.
Yeah, so the placebo group, or no individual in the placebo group, can actually step out and say, okay, I got the placebo, I know it for sure. Doesn't happen, because everybody gets it. So it's a good way of kind of balancing it. Because, you know, if you are in the placebo group and you probably have, you know, some slight fever or something, you probably go back and say, okay, I was in the placebo group, I got this. So you know, there's that, it just kind of takes it out from the mental frame that I got the placebo. So that's completely out. You know, so your behavior just changes after that.
Yeah, I think it's always... So I was talking to this guy who was participating in the AstraZeneca trial. And he was saying about how people around him are also freaked out a bit. Because the one question is, hey, are you now vaccinated? Are you now immune? And I think that is a communication that we have kind of not really emphasized on. The fact that even if you get the vaccine dose, you are not immune immediately. It's going to take some time. And that, I think, is something that we have been missing from a lot of our communication. He was saying about how people around him were like, oh, are you feeling ill? Are there any side effects of the vaccine? So a lot of questions around his general health. And I can just imagine what these trial participants must be going through every day. I mean, if someone knows that you're a trial participant, questions from, do you have the disease? I mean, there's so much misinformation, right, about vaccines.
Yeah, so let's hope when the when Haryana's health minister said that he actually volunteered for getting the vaccine, he meant that he volunteered for participating in the trial, because otherwise it would mean that the trials were not randomized and it would completely lose the point of actually conducting those trials in the first place, right? So moving on, after the last episode that we did on this COVID-19 vaccine update, one of the listeners had a question, and I'm sure other people are also having the same question. And the question is that, is there any agreement for vaccines, for procurement of vaccines between the Serum Institute of India and Government of India?
Right now, as in, you know, whatever we know in the public domain, we know that Serum Institute has said that they will deliver 100 million doses of their vaccine by January end somewhere. And the plan is to actually, you know, use these vaccine doses to vaccinate all the frontline workers who've been working through the pandemic. To this effect, we've also seen the Government of India ask for this data from the states and say that, you know, you need to prepare these lists of all people that need to be vaccinated in this first phase. So I think up to that part, everything is quite clear, saying that Serum is going to provide these 100 million doses and the Government of India is going to very actively vaccinate all frontline workers. But beyond that, I think the water just gets murky over there, because there is no agreement that is in place, or at least is in the public domain. Neither the government has said anything about it, saying that we are going to procure so many vaccines from company A, B or C. You know, and right now it's only AstraZeneca that has come out with some interim data. So, you know, other Zydus and all other candidates are still kind of going through their clinical trials. So probably it's a little too early to commit to a vaccine as well. Maybe, you know, a second vaccine candidate in India might show 90-95% efficiency, and probably the government would want to opt for that. But beyond that, we really don't know what the Government of India is planning to do right now. And as we've said from the beginning of, you know, of our vaccine strategy document, is that, you know, there has to be documentation, there has to be some information that is put out by the government so that it builds public trust. So that is something that we still see is lacking. And we would, it would be really nice if government would put something like that out and say, don't worry, this is our plan, you know, because there are other things, you know, like if, which can result from this, you know, where people actually say that, okay, I'm not going to get vaccinated for the next 2 years if this is how things are going. And people start seeking alternatives, you know. So there is like a demand for, you know, black marketing, or people, you know, might choose to actually fly to a different country and take a vaccine. And all those things, you know, people start thinking because I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on countries as vaccines kind of come out as well. You know, because US is saying that we'll have vaccines in December. And, you know, that kind of puts pressure on, I think even France has kind of come under pressure and said, okay, we will also try to give out our vaccines by December. So if there are vaccines available in a different part of the world and not in India, then people are going to panic and say, why aren't we getting it? And they'll try to do certain things. So it's better if a plan is created and put out and said, okay, we plan to vaccinate so many people by July, so many people by September, and so many people by December using A, B, and C vaccines. So that kind of builds some confidence.
What you said, Amir, right now, I think, isn't the Government of India taking some steps towards that? Because in the recent news, the Prime Minister of India conducted a meeting with chief ministers of all states regarding the logistics about vaccine deployment. And in the meeting, it was established that the cold storage, setting up cold storage should be the responsibility of the state governments. So were there any concrete decisions that were taken in that meeting?
Nothing so far. Like, you know, it's just kind of a guideline saying that we will provide you vaccines and you need to ensure that the last mile delivery is done by the states. So there is some signal saying that we want to be involved in the vaccination drives, and, you know, we would like to, you know, control it, and you will do the last mile delivery. But the question over with, especially with COVID vaccines, is not so much about the infrastructure right now, because that you can start building and have it in place. but also where is the supply going to come from? So, you know, the health minister of the country has said that, you know, Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are not even under consideration right now. So that kind of leaves us with all the Indian candidates of vaccines. AstraZeneca is like a 50-50, but you can consider it to be somewhat Indian. So you can say that, you know, they have limited themselves with the four or five vaccine options that are available right now, because they're considering Biological E, which has entered phase one clinical trials, also as a vaccine candidate now. So they have kind of, you know, said but that we will want to work with these people. And definitely so, because all the production capacity is in the country. But again, there is no clear identification of who's going to be the supplier, how many doses, when will they reach, you know, because that's how vaccine companies also work, right? They would want to pre-fill their orders and say by July, we will supply so many vaccines to so many people. Because if you see, even Serum has kind of signed up agreements with the government of Bangladesh. So they have a commitment over there. And that's kind of quite clear. But there is no agreement like that, which is put in public domain by Serum or by Government of India. So I think that area is still unclear, and it's better if it is resolved as soon as possible.
Moving towards the end, can you guys tell me a good news that has been there in regard with the COVID-19 vaccine development? Is there anything that we should look forward to?
Obviously, the good efficiencies that the vaccines have shown, the fact that the union government is working with state governments for last mile delivery. The one thing that I am really excited about going forward is the fact that our universal immunization program might actually become universal. So at the moment, we call it the universal immunization program, but it caters only to young children and expectant mothers. And this is our one shot at developing infrastructure which we can actually use to reach a lot of people, get a lot of health data, and hopefully use that for improving general public health in India. So that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, the other thing that I think is quite interesting is that, you know, the AstraZeneca trial data, although very limited, but also says that, you know, their vaccine works well above, well for people above 65 years of age. So that is something that, you know, we did not have much information on. So probably going forward, as more data comes out, you know, we will have some information on this, and probably if everything is fine, we could consider, you know, older adults into the vaccination campaigns first, you know, after frontline workers. We could say that, okay, let's vaccinate older adults if the immunization data is quite good in them.
The only cautionary note I want to add for all of these results is the fact that most of these trials have been held outside India. So we really need to wait for trial results from India to come out to see how effective these vaccines are going to be in our populations and what kind of safety profile it's going to have. So
yeah, I think, again, the first one to come out would be AstraZeneca and Serum. So I think the trial was paused in between due to an adverse event. So I think that's one reason why their data is a little delayed.
Yeah.
So I think probably next month we'll have more data from those guys. And hopefully by then we'll also see some more data from, you know, other vaccine candidates. So
yeah, and AstraZeneca is also trialing people over 65 in India. So that would be another good data point to have.
Those are some interesting updates, guys. I mean, I'm sure like we are all looking forward to the vaccine actually working, especially in higher risk groups such as people above 65. So thanks, Amay and Shambhavi, for providing us with interesting insights on the COVID-19 vaccine front. And also thank you to listeners for tuning into All Things Policy. We'll be coming out with more episodes on COVID-19 vaccine updates, so stay tuned. Also, if you guys have any questions with regards to whatever has been discussed in this episode or any question in general related to COVID-19 vaccine, please feel free to post your questions on Takshashila's social media handles. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in. Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.